WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Frank Conroy's first novel has just been published, and it's something of an event in the literary world. People have been expecting him to write a novel for about 27 years, ever since the publication of his acclaimed memoir, Stop Time. But after Stop Time, his life fell apart. It wasn't until 18 years later that he completed his second book, a collection of short stories called Midair. After Midair, he became the head of the Iowa Writers' Workshop, one of America's most important writing programs. His new novel, Body and Soul, is the story of a young musical prodigy who lives in poverty but finds a wonderful, dedicated teacher. He goes on to become a great musician. I asked Frank Conroy if there were any parallels between him and his character.
I've played the piano all my life. In fact, I played professionally as a jazz pianist for about 5 years and sort of bush league for another 5 years. I played jazz, and I don't... the hero of this book is a prodigy and is a very, very good pianist. I'm a competent jazz pianist. I didn't have a teacher. In a way, that's probably, you know, that every novel contains fantasies, I think. And this one, fantasies about teachers and father figures. And I didn't have a father. I didn't have a teacher. But Claude does, you see.
Well, your father left the family when you were about three or something.
That's right. He was a manic depressive, so he was institutionalized most of the time. They didn't have lithium in those days.
And what about not having a piano teacher? What was the reason for that?
There was a boarder in our apartment who was a professional musician, and there was an attempt. There was an attempt at him giving me some lessons, but he was a sadistic psychopath, and it turned me off. It turned me off very rapidly. The whole idea of piano lessons, you know, he used to squeeze my neck with his fingers and say, he really was, he was nuts. But so I went back and I learned myself. I learned very slowly. At first, I learned the blues, boogie woogie, which I picked up, off the radio from Harlem uptown, and I just stuck with it. In fact, in this book, in the writing of this book, I had to go back and really re-educate myself about music from the beginning on, and I had to learn some new stuff, some stuff that I didn't know. The 12th tone, in particular, was a challenge.
It's funny, coming out of a background where you had no father figure and no teacher, you kind of went on to, among other things, become a very well-known teacher as the head of the writers' program at the University of Iowa.
Yes, and I also have three sons.
You were, I think, 27 when your memoir Stop Time was published.
Yes, I guess I was 27 when the first excerpt came out in The New Yorker.
And after Stop Time was published, very acclaimed and so on, I think it was about 10 years until you wrote another book?
Yes.
I'm sure you've been asked this a lot, but what happened in the interval, in the interim?
A certain amount of trouble in my life, sort of serious trouble. The end of my first marriage, I had to leave my two kids, which was difficult for me because, my father left. My mother died a very long, slow process, and there was really nobody else to look after her except me, and that was very draining. And it was a difficult time. Also, I didn't have any money, and I'd spent so many years writing. I really didn't have the training to do any kind of ordinary job, so it was tough. It was a tough time.
What was it like for you to be looking after your mother? From your memoir, Stop Time, you'd get the feeling your mother didn't always do such a good job looking after you.
That's true. I hope I did a better job. But, you know, I mean, good heavens, I mean, the woman was dying. I mean, and I had to, you know, I went to the, first of all, getting her into a hospital was hard. Then she was in and she was out, and then I took her back in. The last time, if you've read my story Midair, there's a story in there where it's autobiographical, and it's one of these things. It really happened, but it's one of those things you can't put into a story because it's too convenient. I was driving into the hospital for what I knew would be the last time, down the Merritt Parkway from Connecticut into New York, and we had both been so preoccupied with this. That we forgot. And as we were driving along, suddenly it got dark and everything changed in the exterior world. It's because there was an eclipse of the sun, you know, and that actually happened. So I put it in the story.
Boy, that is the kind of thing I think you might have been afraid to put in the story because it seems like it's too much the metaphor.
Yes, but it happened. I mean, not that that's really any defense. You know, students will often say that to me, but it happened, you know. And I say, well, I don't care if it happened. It isn't any good. But there, I just couldn't stop myself from doing it. I put it in and I thought it worked.
My guest is writer Frank Conroy. His new novel is called Body and Soul. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. Writer Frank Conroy is my guest. Your father was a drinker, and you went through a period when you were drinking a lot too. Did that make it even worse? Did you have this fear of that you were picking up some of the habits of a man who you barely knew?
Well, I don't think I felt I was picking up his. I mean, whatever sins or stupid things or self-destructive things I was doing were really not modeled after anyone. They were
right.
I found them myself, you know. But yes, indeed. I mean, it's funny. I've noticed this about a lot of artists. They have a very peculiar relationship to their body, as if it's just some old suitcase you have to lug around with you, some old battered up suitcase. And so there's a and I certainly had that. I mean, I didn't take care of myself, and I drank too much. I smoked a lot. I finally stopped smoking. But, you know, yes, I didn't help matters, I think, by the various methods that I used to escape the depression and the confusion that I felt.
Well, I really like your description about how a lot of artists see their body as...
Yeah, it's well. We live in our heads so much, you know.
Yeah.
The important stuff really takes place in some kind of hyperspace inside the brain or inside the imagination. And I know a number of Marilyn Robinson. I was talking to her. It turns out that I write in bed. I always have ever since the beginning. I put up pillows behind my back, and I put the legal pad across my knees and write. And it's funny. I mean, I really need to do that. And I found out that Marilyn also writes in bed. And we were laughing about it because what we're trying to do, of course, is sort of deny the existence of our bodies at all. You get in bed.
Right.
As if
as if it's time to dream and just, lose consciousness.
Yes, and, you do everything to sort of minimize your physical awareness of your body while you enter the dream of the work, and you're concentrating very intensely. And, you see pictures and you hear sounds and smell smells and you're doing all of this. And your body seems to have nothing to do with it.
Well, did that ever change for you? Did you ever get to feel that... you had to take care of your body and kind of
sure it did
be a part of your physical self and all.
Yeah,
of that.
Sure it did.
What brought you around on that?
Well, a couple of things. One, I went too far, and so I finally woke up that hey, Frank, I said to myself, this is crazy. You could be better stop this stuff. So there was that, and then there was the birth of my third child, who is 6 years old, and that changes things. and advancing age. You know, I'm 57. So I stopped smoking. I didn't stop drinking. I still drink a little bit in the evening, maybe a little bit too much sometimes, but it's very much under control, and I live a very stabilized life and have for quite a while.
Was there any connection between kind of getting back into your body, so to speak, and writing more prolifically again, or being more satisfied with what you wrote?
No, I don't think it had to do with that. To some extent, I think it had to do with being able to live in a fairly stable situation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not so much my relationship to my body, but my relationship to the world itself. I mean, I need a stable environment where I don't wake up in the middle of the night thinking, God, how am I going to pay the rent, or how am I going to, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Poverty can be very claustrophobic. I mean, when I was living in Nantucket, the house wasn't heated, it wasn't finished. In the winter, you know, I mean, if a pipe broke, I mean, I'd be down there in the crawl space with the torch, the butane torch. And it was a big deal. I mean, I couldn't get a plumber to do it. I had to go down and do it myself. And, so I'd spend half the day crawling around under there trying to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I sure do, yeah.
I mean, I think in a way you have to have been there to really understand it. But it's very time-consuming and energy-consuming to be broke. It's as simple as that.
Did you have just different personalities in New York and on Nantucket?
That's a good question, and I'm not sure, because there was a period of sort of quite severe depression, separating the two time eras, mm-hmm. the two zones, the two time zones. I mean, I would have these panic attacks, very bad, sort of paralyzing, actually. And, you know, that was before they had drugs to deal with that sort of stuff. So, you know, you just had to go through it.
What would panic you?
Oh, it's exactly, you know, it's just totally classic. I mean, it's what, it's like what Freud talks about. Is it panic? The patient is terrified, but you ask the patient what the patient is terrified, and they can't tell you. In other words, you're not afraid of something. You are just in a state of panic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not rational.
Mm-hmm.
It's somatic. Your heart's going like crazy, and eventually it gets better.
Your memoir Stop Time begins and ends with you in a Jaguar driving very fast from London to about 20 miles south of the city where you lived.
Yes.
And the prologue is about the release of that drive, the release of driving really fast in a sports car.
Yeah.
The epilogue is the car crash, where you nearly get killed and you're miraculously saved because the car nearly gets wrapped around a fountain.
Yes.
That
was prophetic, wasn't it?
What do you mean?
I mean, in Stop Time, that's a warning. And in a sense, maybe I was warning myself, because it wasn't a car in a particular fountain, but, I was living pretty dangerously later. And I was lucky to get out unscathed.
Do you still vividly remember the moment of the crash?
No, I was pretty drunk. And it was late. I remember it, but I remember more what I was thinking than I have an actual sense memory of the event. You know, I remember more what I was thinking, which is that I was really, it seemed to me that, you know, I clearly was, I could die. I mean, and I remembered, it was interesting because it didn't particularly frighten me.
You think that's because you were drunk?
No, it happened to me later when I was sober. I had a at one point about 10 years ago. I had a hemorrhaging, duodenal ulcer, and I went to the hospital real fast. And the doctor told me later that I had 15 minutes, you know, I had tops. If it had been 15 minutes longer, I would have been DOA. But I knew when I was in that emergency room, when you see that there are 9 people around you and every one of them is doing something, you know that you're in trouble. And, of course, I was bleeding. I was hemorrhaging. There was blood all over the emergency room. And I knew I could die right then. And I didn't feel frightened. And that time I was certainly quite sober. I didn't feel frightened. I felt like, what a shame. I mean, this is too early. I've got stuff to do.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Frank Conroy's new novel is called Body and Soul. This is Fresh Air.